All right, this is always a fun topic. How spare athletes would fare against professionals. And the New York Times just did a piece titled, Why the Worst NBA Player is Still Better Than You. And they talk about Brian Scalabrine. He spent 11 seasons in the NBA. He was a popular reserve for Boston back in 2008 when they were really, really good and won a championship. Scalabrine would get on the court and everybody would marvel at the fact that he was 6'9", 250 pounds, yet seemed very unathletic and didn't seem like a very good basketball player. But as this Times article points out, there are millions of people around the world who play basketball. Fewer than 500 of them are in the NBA at any given time. Fewer than 150 are in the WNBA at any given time. And all of them are better than these amateurs who think that they could go toe-to-toe with professionals. Scalabrine, interviewed by the Times for this article, says strangers still challenge him to one-on-one games. Last month, a video went viral showing Scalabrine being challenged at a gym by an overeager high schooler. Scalabrine played him, beat him 11-0.
Sure.
Scalabrine averaged 3 points per game in his NBA career, and he says this happens to him regularly, and other unheralded former players tell the Times the same thing. People are always challenging them. Scalabrine's now 43 and looked pudgy on television, they say, compared to the best athletes in the world that he's running up and down the court with. Was never known as much of a rebounder or a scorer. But he carved out an 11-year career, so he had something. And he says it's his looks that invite the challenges from even high school kids. There was a Boston radio station that came up with scallenges to find local players that would play Scalabrine in one-on-one challenges. And they did this right after he retired, and they kept this challenge, this promotion going for a while. Scalabrine won every single game by a huge margin.
Sure.
But Boston was full of these guys that thought they could challenge him and beat him.
Unless you played at a pretty high level in college, if you're just a dude who played pickup, and even if you're in good shape, you're in your 20s, I can't believe you'd be that delusional to think that you could beat an NBA player. I mean, you know, maybe if you play him first one to score a bucket or something like that, maybe. But to think that you're just as good as somebody who is on an NBA roster is just, it's delusional.
Scalabrine said that pro athletes, and I've always believed this, even the retired ones, have an extra gear that the average person cannot tap into and cannot relate to. Yep. They're just cut from a different cloth. He says it's the dark place. He says, I would always say things in a game like, if I miss this next shot, my kids are going to die.
Oh my gosh.
He said, I would say that to myself in games or at the free throw line just to get through it, just to put the pressure so I can lock in and make the shot. And that's that dark place that they have to go to. You know, I've seen it in endurance sports. Pros in endurance sports, they go to these dark places for long periods of time, not just for a free throw, but for hours. They push their bodies to the extent where people don't think you can push it that far, but they can go to this weird place of self-torture and hold it for hours. And it's a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, the mental makeup, let alone the physical advantages that they have. And you may think a dude is uncoordinated and shouldn't be on an NBA roster, but it's because they're going up against the greatest athletes in the world. They may look that way, but as it relates to the common man or person, it's not even close.
The funniest comment in this article, Scalabrine said his former teammate, when they were in Chicago together, Joe Kim Noah, said it best. He said, Scal, you look like you suck, but you don't suck. And because he looked like he sucked, that's why everybody thought they could take him. This even applies for guys and WNBAers. Now, it's a little different here. Maybe someone, you know, who played at a really high level in high school could beat a WNBA star, but they cite Cheyenne Parker. She's 28, a forward for the Atlanta Dream, which I didn't know, even though she's entering her seventh season. She says that she's challenged all the time because she's a tall woman at, you know, rec centers, pickup games. She said last month in Chicago, where she lives, some guy started trash-talking her. And so the game starts. It's a five-on-five game. First chance to touch the ball. She goes, I like to work on my moves during pickup games, so I've got this nice little Kyrie Irving move. And I juke this guy real bad, and everybody started laughing. So even these guys who think that they can take the pro women can't always take the pro women.
Didn't you used to make outrageous claims about what you would do in the WNBA?
Yeah, and I still believe that. I think I'd be a 10-5-3 guy.
Wake up.
Back in my prime, not
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Back in my prime.
Sure, any time.
I think I'd be good for 10 points, 5 boards, 3 assists. Parker was asked why amateurs are so willing to challenge journeyman basketball players. And she said, it's the same reason why a guy that I would never, ever give a chance to still has confidence to come up to me and ask for my number.
Yeah.
It's the same type of confidence that these people have even to think that they can beat a professional.
Think they got a shot.
Think they got a shot.
What's the old saying? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right.
It's probably also the old volume shoot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you see this guy with this beautiful woman and you don't understand how she went out with him. Well, maybe that was the only beautiful woman that said yes in 100 tries that he asked.
Yeah. Yeah, respect.
And so
he kept going.
So maybe some of these guys who are challenging great athletes or pro athletes or ex-pros, maybe they just do it every day and they figure, oh, once in a blue moon, maybe I'll beat one.
Yeah.
All right, what experiences have you guys had up close and personal with pros, and did it ever even remotely enter your mind that maybe I could beat them?
We had the one famous matchup between me and, at the time, I think he was the best face-off guy in the NHL, Guy Carboneau. And this is late 90s, and this is back when we were playing hockey in our ridiculous charity challenge on ice, and we would play some during the year. And I was terrible at hockey, but the one thing that I thought I was half decent at was face-offs. And one morning on the show, I said, you know what? I think I'm good enough at face-offs. I think the face-off thing's kind of lucky anyway. I bet I could at least win one face-off against Guy Carboneau if he gave me 10 chances. And sure enough, next thing we knew, it was either before an exhibition game, or I think it was like the Stars fans night before the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was. And they were going to skate around and sign autographs and stuff. But the big promotion before the event, and there was a lot more people at Reunion Arena than I thought would show up, was me in the face-off challenge against Guy Carboneau, the best in the NHL. My biggest fear was that he was just going to upend me every time, and I was going to fall. He would, you know, just get under my stick, and I'll somehow make me fall every time. But I did. I want to say I won two.
Yeah. I was going to say, I knew you won at least one of them.
Yeah.
I think you did more than one.
Yeah, I think I got two.
But you couldn't have won, like, a whole challenge.
No, there's no way.
Like, you couldn't have taken 6 out of 10 or something.
No, and
like
I'm surprised I got those two, and I want to say it was luck, or he was saying all these guys, and I think he did, like, wink at me before the one that I won. I think he may have given me one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was semi-impressed at my
quickness. He was. And he was never the same player afterwards. He had really lost the confidence.
I think he did retire a couple of years later.
Yeah, his mental game was shaken.
But man, I remember thinking it was a funny idea, and it was all fun until we got out on the ice, and then here he was staring at me. And I don't know, for some reason I saw impending death for me somehow, just in a face-off. And it was really frightening.
I wonder why any pro athlete ever agrees to do any of those things.
I know.
It's because always like, a bad outcome for them.
Yes.
You really want a piece of me. And maybe they do it because they want to prove their point. You're not even close, Chief.
But you proved him wrong, George.
Yeah, I don't know how close I was.
Back in your Halcyon golf days, did you ever play with a pro, a real pro, and tee it up that day thinking, maybe I shoot 71 and he shoots 72?
You could have a good day, he could have a bad day.
That never happened. The closest one to it, when I told this not too long ago, was back when the Champions Tour, but the Seniors Tour was in town, and they had a media seniors golfer challenge, and my partner was David Graham. I don't know all the teams, but one of the other teams was Lee Trevino and Dale Hansen, and it was six teams playing five holes, and it came down to David Graham and me against Lee Trevino and Dale Hansen, and we won the last hole, and we won. I still got the trophy. And I know they were not in their prime anymore, but they're still great players.
Right.
And I looked somewhat legitimate in those five holes.
Okay.
And I could not believe that I was actually playing golf with Lee Trevino. That was so intimidating. And heck, David Graham, U.S. Open champion, great player.
Yeah.
And he was my partner, and he was like giving me advice on I want to say it was alternate shot, too.
Did you tell him to back off on the advice that you had it?
I got this. All right, I don't need a caddy, okay?
So do you think that if it had been you versus David Graham for 18?
Oh, you would have smoked me.
Okay.
Yeah. But at least I got the illusion for four or five holes that, okay, I can walk with these guys. And again, that was 24 years ago. It was a long time ago.
Right. God, it's been that long.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was late 90s.
Man.
So it's been a while.
And you guys know my tennis partner, Pete Sampras.
Right.
I think he played pro at some point, too.
Yeah, he did. He did
that was an
pro.
Exhibition at Moody, but you didn't enter that thinking, I can kind of hold my own with Pete.
I knew I could hold my own because I had confidence in my partner, Pete, and I knew I could hold my own against Andy Roddick and Corby. And I think Pete and I won.
I think y'all did too.
I think we won
mm-hmm.
with old wooden tennis rackets.
Did Andy
that
ever
my dad's
rev one
boy.
Up at you? A serve like 110
oh, yes.
miles an hour?
Oh, yes.
Did you ever see it?
It was pretty fun watching that thing sail by me. It was great. I did that and I won. Beat Andy Roddick. So I marked that down as Gordon Keith beats Andy Roddick.
You can technically say that.
I guess so.
Yeah, it's a little incomplete, but you can say that.
And then I want to say I beat Paul Stankowski.
You did. He played with one club, and then you only got the putt. In other words, he would have to play the entire hole, and all you had to do was putt for
but you
where
got,
he placed the.
Did he get to place, or you got to place?
I did. I think, yeah. And I'd place you, in the toughest part of the green.
Right.
But you still exceeded expectations.
I exceeded expectations, and I beat Paul Stankowski. So that's pretty impressive.
That's a pretty long track
that's
record.
Two different sports that I beat
athletes.
Pros at.
Corby and I, a couple of years ago, played a tennis exhibition at T-Bar M with a couple of pros who were ranked about 600th in the world. Seriously, I think they were 600 and 610 or something. And so that was, and I'm not a very good tennis player, but that was up close and personal to see how good those guys were. And then there's a huge gap from them to the Federers and the Nadals.
Mm-hmm.
The most legit experience I've ever had against pros was a bike race that both of you came to. I know George was there. I think Gordo was there. Maybe it was just George.
California?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So normally in bike races around Texas, I'm just racing other amateurs, and maybe once in a blue moon, a pro will show up. But for a long time in bike racing, the pros and the category ones and twos would race together because there weren't enough of all of them to have individual races. So maybe once in a while, a pro would show up to a local race. But in California, there's this nationally famous criterium race called Manhattan Beach Grand Prix. And I did it back in the day when it was pros and category ones and twos. Well, that day there were 120 people in the race. 40 or 50 of them were pros.
Wow.
It's the most pros by a mile I've ever raced against. And it was a 90-minute closed course, one-mile loop. You went around for 90 minutes.
Which set up perfectly for you.
Set up perfectly for me. Well, after about 35 minutes, I was spit out the back of the pack. The pace was so unbelievably fast My eyes were crossed, and I was drooling, and it was all I could do to hang on. And we were averaging something like 30, 31 miles an hour. It was relentless with the 40 or 50 pros at the front of the race driving the pace. And I was racing for the old Plano cycling team back then, now defunct. And I remember after I'd been dropped, I was just then making laps by myself.
Yeah,
and I remember
so
hearing
defeating.
George.
We did notice that.
I remember hearing George in the crowd one time, "Go Plano!" And I think I got failed smile.
Yeah, I do remember that of you riding with failed smile. But I didn't know any. I had no idea what was going on in the race. I just knew that. I don't think Junior
at that
was doing
point,
very
don't
well.
You just veer off the course and head to a Froyo shop or something?
Yes, because they remove you. So I did like a couple laps of dishonor. And then after about 45 minutes, as the pack is about to catch me and lap me, then the officials take you off the course.
They wave you off. You're going to have to leave the race.
So I made
them out there with those airplane directing sticks and
so
point you off.
And so I made it 45 of the 90 minutes. And those pros couldn't even hold a candle to the pros who race in the Tour de France.
Yeah.
So that really put it in perspective for me that day, because I started the day thinking, well, I can at least hang in the back of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a gap between me and the spare domestic pro, and there's such a gap between the domestic pro and the European Tour winner pro that it's hard to comprehend.
Okay, so say Lance Armstrong let himself go for 5 years, like didn't race at all,
mm-hmm.
and maybe put on 30 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And during that same time, you're doing your usual, right? You ride every day and
right.
all that kind of stuff. Could he still beat you, you think, then?
I'm going to safely lean towards yes, because he's still beneath the 30 extra pounds, has that engine.
He's just a genetic freak.
Yes. I think some of those guys at that level are such genetic freaks that, I mean, you'd have a better chance if they're not training, because a lot of it does go into training.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Scalabrine is still playing basketball, pick up ball from time to time. So a lot of it has to do with their current condition. But I would never bet against the pro. I'll put it that way.
Hey, how about when Junior took on the Iceman? It was
absolutely
a very short game. Yeah, you beat
yeah,
him one-on-one.
And I don't even like to talk about that because he's my all-time favorite basketball player.
You're conflicted
on
that.
You didn't say
one.
That when you were drilling a three on him. When,
yeah.
Gosh, I didn't tell you guys this. I found him crying. Like about 30 minutes later after that event.
I don't even like to talk about it.
He was crying, and I tried to console him and say, hey, man, it's not over, dude.
We carried that on the ticket, and we were at a basketball camp, and he was there, and he and I played one-on-one to three. And he got the ball first, and he missed his first shot, not because of my defense. Then I got the ball, and I made three in a row somehow. I remember I made two in a row because he wasn't playing defense on me. And then when he really D'd up, I threw up a blind fall away 30 footer and somehow it went in and I won and I felt awful.
Yeah, hey, what's up, Chris?
If I could do it all over again, I would lose 3-0.
Hey, didn't we go 2-on-2 against he and Artis Gilmore and I got to have my shot blocked by Artis Gilmore?
It was so funny to see you leaning on Artis Gilmore in the post.
Like I had a chance, like, all right.
All right, when spares take on pros, 8:34 on the ticket. Coming up next, we're going to get a Cowboys draft preview from Stephen Jones.